the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to a special edition of Civitalk. We have a guest today, Winston Brady. He's the Dean of Academics, and he's got degrees from William & Mary and Southeastern Theological Seminary, and he is an MBA candidate at the UNC Keenan Flagler School. And Brooke is here with us as well. Winston, how's it going?
It's going really well. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Yeah, we're going to talk about school choice because it's School Choice Week. And also, we're going to just kind of look a little bit into Winston's background and cover some classical education. Just look at some different ways that your child can excel and learn.
Alrighty, Winston, thank you for joining us. So let's just start, I guess I would say more generally, just to help our audience sort of orient themselves with what we're talking about today. School choice is something that many in our audience are already familiar with. But I would say let's go a little higher upstream and talk about education more generally. And so you're an educator. You told me that you worked at Thales for the past 9 years and, you know, you have lots of interactions with students start in middle school and high school. It sounds like, correct?
Mm-hmm. I've been teaching at Thales Academy for the past 9 years. So we're a network of small private schools. We have about maybe 500 students per campus, but we have 8 campuses. So we've got one in Apex where I work. It's a 612 school, a K-5 school in Apex. We've got one in Holly Springs, one in Wake Forest, Rollsville, Knightdale, Raleigh. We've opened one up in Waxhaw, and then we have plans to expand our particular brand of classical education into other cities on the southeastern seaboard.
Wow, that's so exciting. And actually, I would like to discuss the classical education, especially your particular brand, in a little bit. But let's start more generally. What would you say is the purpose of education, especially in our 21st century context? What do you think students should be receiving there at school, at home? Is education something that just happens at school? How would you define this?
Well, I'd say that education, at least at Thales, and our mission is to provide the highest quality education at the lowest possible price. And for me as an educator, getting up there with 7th grade students and 12th grade students, I teach a history class as well as a research and writing class for our seniors. But I'm primarily concerned with educating our students to handle the responsibilities that come with living in a country where you can do pretty much whatever you want here in the United States. So educating students for liberty so that they can use the opportunities that they've been given well. I really want to excite a sense of intellectual curiosity and wonder in my students so that once the books are closed and the lesson is over, that the students are still inspired to go out and continue learning. A classical education is meant to really excite that sense of wonder and intellectual curiosity. I mean, really, like a great books education, one that's founded on works like the Bible, Aristotle, Dante's Inferno. A great books education is really, it's kind of centered on these key texts of the Western tradition, but it's meant to take students through the great books so that they have the confidence to take on the whole world. It's meant to give like a sense of historical continuity so that students have this, you know, this confidence needed to take on a wide variety of challenges that they're going to find in the world today.
So given this, this rise in automation, artificial intelligence, a lot of people, there seems to be some fears, whether substantiated or not, that that the robots are going to take our job. And so how does a classical or great books education prepare someone for this future? And or maybe, I guess, I see a rise in classical education now, or a re-embrace of liberal arts. And I've classically educated my children. I homeschooled them for many years, and I'm a big fan of classical education. And so this is something I've had to grapple with is, okay, so we see this growth in technology, and we see this rapid sort of advance in innovation. And so what does looking back and reading Dante's Inferno, how does this help someone cope with what's going on in the present and what they should be expecting in the future?
Well, the authors of those great books. So in our program at Thales, we start off with the very beginnings of Western civilization with like ancient Sumer and ancient Egypt. And then we move forward in time. You know, I teach European history from the fall of the Roman Empire up until like whenever Brexit happens. So, you know, hopefully that'll come by the time.
I mean,
like,
that's been happening for what, 4 years now and still hasn't happened?
And I've been teaching for a long time too. So there's definitely an emphasis on what are called like the transcendentals. So ideas like the true, the good, and the beautiful. So you're trying to present students with ideas that are really meaningful and impactful, ideas that are transformative, so that as students read these particular great books like Dante's Inferno, like that's a book that's particularly dear to me, just reading it in high school and in college. It gave me, I don't know, this intellectual breathing room to consider what's really important and meaningful in life, and allowing me to work those things out, like the answers to those perennial questions about what makes life worth living. It allowed me to work out those answers myself without necessarily being told by my teacher like what to think. I mean, at its heart, like a classical education is meant to teach students how to think, how to reason, how to analyze a text, and then how to communicate their beliefs and, you know, put together arguments so that they can speak to others about what is true and what is good and what is beautiful. So in regards to like the purpose of education, it's really trying to equip students with the intellectual toolbox that they need to be, you know, virtuous, you know, self-directed, you know, entrepreneurial. They have the confidence needed to take on like all the challenges of life. And a lot of that stems from studying all the mistakes of the past and all these individuals that have, you know, one way, shape, or form, you know, failed in one way or another. One person I like to cite is Winston Churchill. Just the, you know, He received a classical education on par with what we offer at Thales as far as the emphasis on Latin and on history. And that sort of education not only prepared him to take on, you know, the horrors of the Nazi regime and Adolf Hitler, but it allowed him to deal with any number of failures and setbacks that he had. Because most people kind of forget that when he was elected prime minister, the apex of his career, he was in his 80s. You know, can you imagine peaking at age 80?
Wow.
And what you would have to, like, I don't know, the stamina. It's like that quote, leadership is the ability to deal with failures and setbacks with no loss of enthusiasm. And I feel like that's certainly like a prime component of a classical education, is that it really equips students with the toolbox that they need to take on challenges and also deal with setbacks in their lives. Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in this historical continuity, this historical continuation thought. You know, you really touched on that. But also, Thales has a real strong moral component to just the education that it offers. And why is that important? You mentioned virtue. And, you know, obviously the American founders, they thought that virtue was critical and paramount for the Republic to survive. But while in terms of just education, sometimes I think this is the moral formation is missed in some public schools. Why is that so essential to just learning, processing, learning, and critical thinking for a child?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that we handle this particular issue there's a couple of different ways that we go about it. One prime component of a classical education is something called the trivium, which is it's a Latin word. It's actually two Latin words that are smushed together. Tri, meaning three, and weum, which is from the Latin via, which means way. So this trivium is the place where three roads meet. And the trivium is composed of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Grammar, you're teaching kids bare bones facts. Logic, you're teaching them the rules of argumentation. And then rhetoric, you're putting all those things together so that students learn the art of public speaking. So they're learning how to think well, how to write well, and then how to speak well. And a prime component of rhetoric is character education and morality. There's a Roman educator named Quintilian. He's like 2nd century BC. He wrote this amazing book called On the Education of an Orator. And his ideal orator, his ideal public speaker, is one who is steeped in wisdom and virtue. And virtue really is just like self-control. You know, it's a kind of strength, but also a kind of strength that allows you to maybe keep check of your passions and, you know, and to do the right thing even when it's not necessarily the most convenient or easy thing to do. But Quintilian recommends that the orator must be moral. That way, when he or she gets up in front of a crowd, he or she can not only know what is the right thing to do, but they can also encourage people to do the right thing as well. I think the other part too of our character education at Thales really stems from our founder, Robert Luddy. He founded a really successful business here in the Raleigh area, and his personal habits of hard work, thrift, he really impresses that upon the entire organization. Every meeting that we have and network-wide webinars and things like that, Mr. Luddy is always bringing us back to those prime, our core, the most important components of Thales Academy. And really, it's just, a love for the great books, a love for the students, and a passion to try to pass on the great traditions that we've inherited so that our kids can really just be educated to their highest potential.
That really brings up a great point in terms of, this stressing this classical education, which I think was stronger to some degree in America's past. And you can certainly argue it was, stronger with the elite sectors of the country and certain schools. But it makes me think that, a lot of the politicians coming forward or people running for president we see just in the news is a reflection of maybe the lowest common denominator in society. So we're not attracting these people that really understand some of these great virtues, some of these great truths. And to me, I don't know what you think about that, but it just kind of popped in my head that we kind of, a lot of politics today reflects some of the, I would think, poorer areas of our education. And I know it's just a reflection of culture in general, but certainly to attract great leaders, I think they have to be steeped in a great truth that kind of reflects a lot of our culture. And Huxley talks about, the greatest lesson from our history is we don't really learn enough from our history. And I think that's true when you kind of look at just sort of the culture today.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point there, because classical education really was just education up until the 1920s. So the type of education that we provide at Thales Academy really is the same type of education that molded the minds of the founding fathers. When Thomas Jefferson or Alexander Hamilton recommended books for their nephews to read, I can think of a couple letters where Thomas Jefferson was specifically recommending different books, but it's the same ones that we read at Thales. I think especially today, contemporary, there's kind of this moral vacuum, this cultural vacuum that we have, and a classical education is trying to fill that with good transformative ideas, as far as what is true, what is good, and what is beautiful. Because if you don't have that, I think students are just going to kind of settle for whatever tends to be easy and trendy and popular. Whereas we're really trying to educate students for liberty and trying to educate students to achieve their fullest potential. Those are things that are really going above and beyond their, just what's popular, what's trending on Twitter right now.
So, but you made a point there that it's easier to go with what's most popular. It requires less mental faculty to just kind of go with the grain. And so it's something that it sounds like, and I would imagine your students really have to do some extra work in wrestling with some of these hard truths that they're presented with in a postmodern world that everything is so subjective, right? And so you talked about this, what I've referred to as the economy of wonder, which is the true, the good, and the beautiful. Well, if beauty, truth, and goodness are subjective, like so much of our culture would assert, how do you teach that there is actually a way to measure it? There's a way to quantify or qualify it. And so I do wonder about that. How practically are you all doing this at Thales? Because you're essentially tapping into something transcendental there, in a world and to an audience that oftentimes would identify themselves as irreligious or a nun, N-O-N-E. They don't identify with a particular religious institution. So how do you teach this in a sort of morally pluralistic context?
Well, thankfully, that is where the role of the great books come in, because you're allowing the authors of those particular texts to really answer those sorts of questions for you. So in my history class, we read a pretty wide sample. Again, from the fall of Rome up to the fall of the Soviet Union, we're so, hopefully this year we can end on Brexit once Brexit finally happens. But you are tracing that narrative arc from, say, the fall of the Roman Empire and going into, you know, really a lot of the same issues as far as like a loss of like transcendent meaning and a settling for short-term gains and pleasures and stuff like that. I mean, the sorts of questions that we're asking today certainly are being kicked around in the last, you know, 100, 150 years of the Roman Empire. I don't want to go too far back there, but you are certainly using the authors of the great books to answer those sorts of questions there. That way you're not necessarily prescribing answers to the students and telling them what to think. Because again, the purpose of a classical education is to teach students how to think, how to reason, and how to argue well. And you're just allowing their thoughts to be channeled and sharpened and guided and hopefully inspired by the selection of texts that you're reading. The trick is always to try to make it relevant for middle school students. Towards the end, just right before the break, we read a number of like really good texts from the Renaissance. We read Boccaccio's The Decameron, and the first, the prologue there goes into a lot of details about the Black Death and the way that so many people, like during the Black Death, right? So 25 to like 50% of your population just like disappears. And people started partying like crazy because, you know, they see the good people and the bad people like perish as a result of the plague. And so they just lost all confidence in that sort of transcendent values. And that gives the students like some good intellectual breathing room to kind of see like what you're describing there play out like in real time and in a way that like really, you know, greatly impacted the ages that come after that, because those teenagers that kind of gave themselves to wild, profligate living. If you're familiar, have you read Boccaccio?
I've not.
It's really good.
Sounds so Italian.
Yeah, it's very Italian. So he's a Florentine poet. He's a little bit after 1348, 13. So he's after Dante, and he's before the.
I only read before Dante.
So. But that's like the Decameron. They're telling stories to kind of wait out the Black Death. But the prologue of it is all the Black Death hitting Florence and how people respond to it. And a lot of people respond to it by just like kind of partying and kind of giving up on life and settling for what's easy as opposed to like what's true and what's good and what's beautiful. So like some that same sort of like what you're talking about there, that's played out in a lot of these texts there and allows students to come to their own conclusions without me necessarily telling them what's true, what's good, and what's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So,
my favorite Italian is Boccherini. He was a composer. You probably heard of him, but I've not read the other Italian. But I do want to ask you. You know, the stuff you're talking about just brings up a lot of points. And what is kind of Thales teaching in terms of just sort of the American Republic and maybe American exceptionalism? Because I think a lot of students today, you kind of mentioned this a little bit. You didn't use this term, but I know you know what it means. We see a lot of emotive reasoning today with a lot of students. You know, they kind of reason things out by their emotion. You know, it's how I feel about something. So why might a classical education or just some of the instruction at Thales go beyond that and give people a little bit more of a depth in terms of, you know, not getting caught in a trap of emotive reasoning, but giving them more tools to think about our republic and civic education and things like that and why they're important?
Mm-hmm. Thales Academy is so blessed to have a really great faculty of passionate teachers who understand students where they are and really work to try to inspire them as to like what is true, what is good, and what is beautiful. In regards to like really bringing out the unique aspects of American exceptionalism, like what I would stress in my class, so teaching European history, we look at the American Revolution, but from the vantage point of, say, the Enlightenment and the kind of current of thought that gave birth to the United States, you know, circa 1760s, 1770s. One, I might stress, how precious freedom is and how difficult it is to live well, you know, in light of that freedom. Human nature being what it is, people can be, you know, somewhat like short-sighted. It's easy enough to choose your own interests over and against the needs of others. And in a place like the United States, you know, this is a great country. We've got, you know, some parts of our history that we're still kind of grappling with. But the idea, kind of like what Alexander Hamilton brings out in Federalist Paper Number 1, of a country where people are uniquely free and we have this opportunity to create a republic, you know, this is something that's like rarely, if ever, happened. You know, human nature being what it is, it like what we're attempting to do here in the United States is like exceedingly exceedingly rare and precious and takes a considerable amount of forethought and responsibility and self-control, which is really what virtue is, in order to faithfully carry out the duties expected of a person living in a republic like the United States. So, I don't know, did that answer your question there as far as like...
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Yeah, I'm very concerned too about just this emotive reasoning that I see going on. And this has been a crisis, I think, in education for generations. But you just see this maybe with the rise of socialism and other type of thing, just from a contemporary political perspective, is people are going by their feelings. Yes, I'd like to have free college. I'd like to have free this or that. And you see that a lot just in a lot of higher education, especially today, or just on a crisis among young people. They demand, you know, whether it be free or they're not thinking out things logically when it comes to history and how it can repeat itself in our current political crisis.
So you're a well-educated person, Ray, had, covered where you attended school, what you're studying right now. And clearly you have to stay on top of all of this as well when you're, working with these students through some of these more dense texts. What do you see as the best way, I'd say, aside from what we've already discussed regarding how to think, rather than what to think, but thinking about, the past couple of decades, there's been such an emphasis on college attendance. You need to make sure you're attending school or college. And subsequently, we've seen, mountains of debt that students have graduated with. And it has led to, I would say, what some have described as a failure to launch. And so they're getting married at later ages. They're not buying homes because they're so busy paying off the student loan debt. What do you see as you're interacting with these students? Are there any causes for optimism about maybe things turning a corner wherein the millennials have really struggled with this, but do you think Gen Z, based on your own anecdotal, experience, that maybe there's some reason for hope?
I would certainly say so. So what I really love is giving tours to prospective parents and just seeing how happy and excited these parents are when I start talking to them about the education that we have at Thales. Like, they really, they love the idea of their students taking a good 3 years of Latin and going through this history in this English literature curriculum, and still that Thales has a really good STEM program. So we really stress the sciences. We have a cool engineering track in our high school program as well. So for me, that does speak to that sense of optimism and hope for the future, and that things have the opportunity to get better, because it's all about human choices and what the next generation, the members of it, choose to do. But the parents get excited when I mention all of these things here, because they didn't have the opportunity to have that kind of education when they were going up through school. The emphasis was more on kind of bare bone, seemed to be the emphasis was more on skills needed for the workforce. And so there was kind of this bare bones reductionistic brand of what education was that, from guys like John Dewey, who you mentioned earlier, in the 1920s and onwards, that, and, hitting more strides in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, and so on, that what education, the purpose of it is to prepare people for the workforce. But ultimately, the people who entered that workforce probably felt probably a little bored, because they didn't necessarily place their valuable, meaningful labor in some sort of broader overarching purpose and context. And so when I start telling them about the trivium, which is, an outlook of education from the medieval period, but not a medieval outlook on education, they get, as excited, if not more so than me, and even their students, because they really want their kids to have an education that really points them towards things that are lasting, that are really valuable, that give meaning to life, ideas that gladden the heart, inspire the soul, and sharpen the mind all at the same time. So on that end, I feel, perhaps that there was something in, American culture that was lost, that we're now getting back again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does feel like we're redigging an old well, essentially, in education. And I think that's definitely cause for hope. Do you have any other questions before we close out, Ray?
I think just a final question is, just, you got parents out here listening. Why do you think school choice, just as a policy point, is valuable in North Carolina? Because you're obviously seeing some kids coming in from public schools. You're probably seeing some really bright kids coming from public schools, and you're seeing them transition in different ways. And obviously some of them are coming in for a reason. Maybe it just didn't work out for them in a public school. But why is school choice important for this state and really the nation?
Well, I can answer, you know, as an educator and as a father of two, that kids are different and they have different interests and different skills and abilities. And like parents need the opportunities, parents should have the opportunities to find a school that best suits the intellectual abilities of their students, that best suits the unique talents and abilities that their kids have. It seems to me that, you know, the United States, the experiment in self-government that we have, the pursuit of happiness, this diverse republic with so many different voices and interest groups, you know, that we were talking before we came on the podcast about Federalist Number 10 and all the different factions, and James Madison, you know, urges the reader to support an ever widening number of factions, because that's going to create more stability in our country as a whole. If you don't have like one faction that's able to like perhaps like swallow up the others. And so for me, like school choice seems to be in that same vein, that, you know, you should make it easy for parents to find opportunities for their kids that best suits the unique talents of their children, not necessarily one size fits all. I'm really thankful to be teaching at Thales Academy, because what we're doing is pretty unique. It used to be that you might have like the traditional public school, and then you might have a private school with a tuition rate that's just well out of reach for most normal families. But Thales Academy has a tuition rate of, depending on the grade level, between $5,200 and $6,000, which is a lot more accessible for North Carolina families. The idea there is that we're taking an education that previously was reserved for the elites, you know, for the upper crust of society, and we're making this available for everybody. So I'm really thankful to be part of the institution where I am, that we're making this unique brand of classical education, one that I feel is just filled with transformative ideas and has this wonderful opportunity to really positively impact students, that we're making this available for everybody.
That's Winston Brady joining Brooke and I, and we want to inform our readers that we have a school choice luncheon on January 29th, 2020. Contact the Civitas Institute to get tickets. That's at the Doubletree Hilton on Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. So we'd love to see you there and continue the discussion on school choice. So Winston, really appreciate having you on, and Brooke, thank you for sitting in. It was a great podcast.